May I have your attention, please? The following is not the real Jeff Foxworthy.
If you smell a newly opened jar of honey before tasting it, you might be a beekeeper. If you can tell the difference between a honeybee and a fly just by listening, you might be a beekeeper. If you learned woodworking but don't build a stick of furniture, you might be a beekeeper.
Welcome, welcome to Bee Love Beekeeping Podcast, presented by our good friends over at Man Lake. At Bee Love, we're all about the honeybees and, of course, the beekeepers. Today, we're going to learn from our guest another way that we as beekeepers can do some good in the world through beekeeping. But first, as you've probably already heard, there's something a little scary going on with honeybees this winter. Massive die-offs are being reported. In fact, depending on which source you read, anywhere from 50% to 70% to even 100% of bee die-offs with commercial beekeepers. This last week, the Honeybee Health Coalition sent an email outlining some of the concerns, saying that commercial beekeepers are discovering, quote, alarming colony losses. These losses are severe, broad, and may impact food security through inadequate pollination services. It continues, the symptoms of loss are reminiscent of colony collapse disorder conditions, which occurred in 2007 and 2008, when bees suddenly disappeared from their colonies. During recent inspections by field scientists, decreased colonies often died with ample honey stores, leaving small patches of brood, with most or all of the adult honeybees missing. Another symptom has been the rapid dwindling of surviving colonies, often within 10 days of passing health inspections. Immediate action is being taken in the form of a study sampling of commercial beekeepers. I have reached out to those involved with the study, including the USDA, and I can't get anyone who's in the know to comment. The only thing I got, and sorry for the rant, but the only thing I got was the following from the USDA's PR department. Quote, please see the statement from the Agricultural Research Service. Please attribute the statement to a USDA ARS spokesperson. By the way, they wouldn't give me the name of that spokesperson. So here's the quote. USDA is aware of the unusual losses to our nation's honeybee colonies and is concerned about its potential impact on food production and supply. USDA Agricultural Research Service scientists are working closely with federal partners, stakeholders, and impacted parties to identify the source of this agricultural challenge. USDA will share more information when data is available. Okay, all right. I realize the research is far from being completed, but I have questions. Beekeepers have questions. And I think we have a right to ask them, and I think we have a right to get answers on what is known so far. But instead of being able to do that, I'm getting the bureaucratic two-step. But, listeners, fellow beekeepers, I promise as soon as I know more, you will know more. And if you know more before I know more, please reach out to me so that we can both know more. In the meantime, I'll try to get over my rant with a little fun here. And the best way to do that is with some wild and crazy beekeeping stories from our listeners. This was 6 hours after inspection. I did an inspection in the late morning, was 100 yards from the hive in my garage doing something entirely unbee related. The bees came and found me and went straight for my eye. This was the beginning of the end for that queen. I had been tolerating this overly aggressive hive for months. But this was the final straw. She was stomped in the driveway 3 weeks ago and replaced. Next one. I got out of the truck one day without my veil on and immediately got stung in the ear. Fine, I thought. It happens. We were extracting from a yard that we had expected was pestered by a skunk during the night, so they were really pissed off. One of them found its way inside my veil, and the bastard went straight for my eye. I'm just quoting here. My coworker and I decided we were just going to call it eventually. They were relentless. As we got into the truck and removed our veils, one of the bees that got into the truck sent after me and stung my ear again. And he was saying how he wishes he had a picture to show us. I don't know, maybe the theme today is pain. Okay, here we go with another one. Mowed the grass around my hives without a suit on. Stopped 20 yards away. Proceeded to be flogged by a swarm of angry bees from about 7 different hives at the same time. I ran 300 yards as fast as I could while simultaneously flailing my arms around my head like a maniac. Literally had to dive into one of my storage sheds and shut the doors. While laying on the floor in my shed trying to recover, I noticed the wasp nest in the building covered in about 20 angry wasps. It was a long day that day. And the only thing I have to say, and this is not an easy thing, is when you are getting chased, sure, run as fast as you can, but don't do the flailing. That's like an attractant to them. They go after it. All right, let's end on a happy note. Here we go. I held a frame up for inspection once, and a hummingbird showed up and drank right out of it. That sounds cool. All right, let's get to today's guest. And a special welcome all the way from across the pond, Sir James Wheeldon. How are you?
Hello, I'm very well, thank you.
I hope that's a compliment and not offensive to call you sir over there.
Oh, not at all. No.
All right.
Don't forget to call sir. It's nice.
And you're in I don't know if I can even say it. Warblington?
Perfect. Yeah, Warblington. Yeah. So down in Haven, at the very bottom of England, the very bottom.
Very south end.
Yeah, the very south.
All right. We're going to talk about your beekeeping journey in a couple of minutes. And sort of like what's the weather there so we can learn about it for other beekeepers around the world that may be in sort of a similar type of client. But the thing that I got my interest in wanting to talk to you is your charity, which I think is so cool. It's called Beekeeping for Hope. And from time to time on this show, we like to feature beekeepers that are giving back. And that's exactly what you're doing. And you are a registered charity in the UK, but a fairly new one. And we don't mind giving you a shout out. Tell us just a little bit about Beekeeping for Hope. Where did the idea come from and how can people participate?
Well, yes. So I went to Moldova in 2021 and I saw it like extreme poverty. I saw people so poor, their house was powered by a car battery. Their bed was covered in mold. So I wanted to help the people out in Moldova, Ukraine, Romania, all those sort of areas. I couldn't think of a way to help them. So I tried to do some fundraising where I went for a run all the way around the place near me called Portsmouth, all the way around. It's like 14 miles. And I didn't raise a lot of money. So I thought, how else can I help them? And then beekeeping started to, because I'm big with insects and wildlife and bits and bobs like that. So when I saw a random advert on the internet about come and have a beekeeping course, so I thought, why not? I'll go on this course and see what it's like. I went on the course and I just came naturally. I knew a lot about bees anyway, so it all came quite naturally. And then I got my first swarm in May of 2023. Yeah, 23. And it was a prime swarm, so a nice big yellow mark queen was in this swarm they caught. They gave it to me. I put it in the hive and it soon grew. I had another guy who gave me a hive. He said, I want to help you build up a bit. So he gave me a big polystyrene, big hive with a queen in there, a red queen at this time. And then I caught my own swarm. I put one out, caught a swarm. So it started to build. And then I suddenly thought, I can actually use my beekeeping to help people. So I started to send, all the honey I was making from the hive, I started to make, of course, a profit out of it. So I wanted to give all of that to Hope For in Moldova, Ukraine. And then I had a guy reach out to me in Uganda saying, can you help our orphanage? So I talked to him for a little while back and forth and saw all his legal documents and everything to make sure he was genuinely legit and stuff. And his name was Sinoga out in Uganda, and he had an orphanage just full of young orphan children. And I started to dedicate one of my hives to that cause. So one of my hives was to, it's called the Green Light Foundation in Uganda. So every bit of honey that came off that went straight to them. Not the honey itself, but I sell the honey, and then that went straight to them, all the money. And then I gave one to Hope For, the guys out in Moldova. They had their own beehive. And then since then, this December, I had another people come out to me in Pakistan, seeing if I could help their orphanage out there. Again, we went through the paperwork together. And so it's the Holy Purpose Gospel Ministry in Pakistan. So they feed poor children, orphans, dry families, and I help them with honey from another hive I've given to them.
That's awesome. The idea of taking something of your bounty, right? Yeah. Whether it's, you know, scripturally, we'd probably take the first jar of honey from every year and donate it or something. But you took a whole hive and did it. And I just love the whole concept. Now people can look you up at beekeepingforhope.org. There are ways to donate there. And I hope you don't mind me just adding this. Do this in your community. If it's too hard for you to go online and do this, take a jar of honey to your local food pantry or sell your first couple of jars of honey at the farmer's market and donate it to Beekeeping for Hope, where it'll go to a good place, or your local food bank or something like that. So now you've had people do these donations from not just the UK, but Australia. Give me an idea of where some people are jumping in from already.
Yeah, so just to try and get people to help and to get our name out of there a bit more, I put it on social media, on Instagram, just to say that I'm willing to give you one of these, which is a little tag called, it says, I'm Beekeeping for Hope. They stick it on their beehive. And it's a little, like, it's metal, a little metal tag. And they stick it on their beehive. Then that beehive sort of becomes my beehive as well. So they donate as many jars as they want. They can do one jar to me, so they sell that one jar. And one of the ladies got in touch with me was a lady called Christian from Australia. And she donated two jars of honey. So she sold these jars. And then she got the money and transferred it to me, and I sent that one to Uganda. I got people locally as well. So one guy in Littlehampton, which is about 40 miles away, he donated a whole super of honey to me, all jarred up, everything already. So all I've got to do is put my label on it and we can start selling that. I've got some guys in the UK who as well, so they get one of my jars and they put it up for auction. So they have a stall to see how much money they can get from it. And then they donate the proceeds to me, and then it goes off to wherever they want it to go to. So
I love it. And I like your sticker idea that you talked about, because whether you have five hives or 25 or 2,005, kind of fun to put a sticker on one and say, hey, this one is going for a good cause. This one's not going in my pocket.
Right, yeah.
And if you ever give tours or have people come over that want to see your hives, it's something to talk about too. So anyway, nice job, James. Tell us what it's like to do beekeeping where you are. First of all, what is the weather like? Does it rain a lot?
Yeah, so it rains a lot. The skies are always gray. It's cold, especially now. And it's just quite stodgy everywhere. So my apron at the moment is just waterlogged. So that's pretty much it. It's just really cold. It doesn't start to warm up till sort of the end of March, April. And then again, it's quite mild. We don't get very hot summers here. We have like a week where it's like intense heat and then it goes back to being cool again, or be a big storm or something like that.
One whole week.
Yeah. So
our listeners in Arizona or Houston or someplace like that are actually going to be very jealous. But is it cold enough in the winter that you have snow, or just cold enough to keep the bees in?
It's we don't really get snow where I am. We've not had snow here since about 2012. All we get is just a a dust of the frost sometimes. That's all we seem to get. But the bees do generally stay in. You get the odd one or two coming out for to like relieve themselves or whatever, then they come back. But it's not many really. But when we do get a really cold snap, for us, a cold snap's -3 or something.
Yeah.
Sometimes our bees will actually...
And we're talking Celsius here, not... So that's...
Yeah.
High 20s or something Fahrenheit, yeah.
That's right, yeah.
We don't feel too bad. But of course, the bees, they're okay. They're in the hive. They're keeping themselves warm. Do you have to feed them quite a bit in winter?
Yeah, so what I do, I don't take off all the honey. So I leave one super on for the bees. So I take off the excess. So I take off, say, my main hive last year did 5 supers. So I took 4 off and I left them one on for the winter. My nukes, the smaller colonies, I do feed them with baker's fondant. They take that down quite well.
Okay, you and I, when we talked previously, we were talking about Varroa a little bit. And just a minute ago, you were showing me. Go ahead and hold it up again. Audio listeners can't see it, but describe what you're holding right there.
I'm holding a 3D printing of a Varroa mite. So it's a life-size Varroa mite, as if this was on me. If I was a bee and this thing was crawling all over me, drinking my plasma. So, it's a pretty good teaching tool. But there's one thing I've learned about Varroa mites is you really can't underestimate them.
Just a quick break here to thank our presenting sponsor, Manlake. Hey, if your weather is anything like mine, it is freezing out. So let's put our creative brains together and visualize spring. Birds chirping, flowers blooming, and bees buzzing. Now let's visualize you enjoying beekeeping so much more with some new gear. Or if you're new to beekeeping and not sure what you need, give Manlake a call, and their experienced beekeepers will help every step of the way. Protective gear, hives and tools, even packaged bees, nukes, and queens. Manlake has it all. And don't forget your discount code, MLBLOVE10, it's in the show notes, for $10 off your first $100 purchase. I'm feeling better already. Now, back to the guest.
I mean, I've left. But the first year I did it, I treated my bees. And all of them survived. All my 7 colonies in my first year survived. This year, I was we went through a bit of a phase where I was moving house and moving our bees to the apiary. I got the treatment in a bit too late, so I lost a few of my hives this year already, and it's all down to Varroa. You go in there, we do investigations, we get a frame out of some capped brood. We open it up, and inside there, it was just the poor little thing in there. It was just covered in Varroa mites, all dead, of course. But yeah, just don't underestimate them. Get them treatments in.
So what do you use for treatment over there?
So we have I haven't got any on me, but we've got this stuff called apibioxal. So it's an acid, and you fill it up to a certain amount and you spray it between the frames, up and down. And the first year, it wiped out all my mites. My bees came out into the spring really healthy, really strong. This year, when I did the same treatment, it didn't seem to do anything to the mites. So I'm actually currently running a GoFundMe to try and get this. Is it alloxic acid?
Oxalic acid.
Oxalic acid, yeah, that's right. So it's this big, it's a mist what goes into the hives and it kills them. So I've been advised to get one of those. So I've almost got enough to pick up one.
Well, good luck on that. And just a reminder to everybody, the way you put it, I loved it. Do not underestimate Varroa mites. But that one, the 3D printing one that you were holding up, I saw something similar to it at the North American Honeybee Expo recently. And it's kind of terrifying when you see it in human size, because if you were to hold it up, it'd probably cover your whole face. It's about that size. And then imagine if it's, say, on your back and you're like a bee that doesn't have arms that can reach to their back and knock things off. And it's the things nightmares are made of. In fact, let's make a horror film. James, let's do it.
Yeah.
Varroa Destructor.
That'd be a good title, but it's just a shame that these things are here and they weaken the colony so much that they just can't fight off disease, can they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the problem. They can even carry some of the disease with them from one hive to another. Do you have the yellow-legged hornets that I'm hearing are all over Europe already?
Dude, I've got one here, actually. So I use these as teaching aids for the kids. So this guy here, that's a queen. They call them yellow-legged hornets, but sometimes they get called Asian hornets as well. So like the old Vespa Valentino. We have not seen any here, but we have had some about 40 miles away in a place called Southampton. They have some there this year. But nothing down my way, which has been good. Yeah, I've got lots of size comparisons. So I've got what you would call a yellow jacket here. Asian hornet in the middle, and we've got our European hornet. I think European hornets are your way as well.
They have found some down in the southeast in two or three states. They're trying to eradicate them before they spread all over the country. So we have our fingers crossed. We're wishing them well. You had mentioned just in passing a couple of minutes ago about catching swarms, a yellow queen and a red queen. Now, for brand new beekeepers, they might go, what in the world is that? So why don't you explain what you mean by that, the colors?
Yeah, so as you know, well, as most beekeepers know, when you have a queen, of course, you give them a color mark, and the color is determined by the year. So when I first got my bees back in 2023, the swarm was from a 2022 queen, so she was yellow. And then 2023, the universal code was red. And I think this year, is it Bloom? I think it's Blue. So we call our queens by that. So we've got the Red Queen. It sounds like something of Game of Thrones, the Red Queen, the Yellow Queen. And I put my queens in resin. So because I don't like killing queens, because I find I get a little bit of a relationship with them. So we name all of our queens. And when they die, I'm devastated when they die. We had one queen, our very first one, called Queen Phoenix, the yellow one. She was our best queen. She produced literally all the queens in our apiary. And she started to lay drone brood, which is where the queen starts to lay just drone eggs, boy bees. And everyone was telling me, kill her, get rid of her, replace her. And I thought, no, I'm going to retire her. So I put her in a little nuke with a few bees. Now, she got better. She started to stop laying drones, started laying workers again. So the other bees didn't like her much. They kept trying to overthrow her by making queen cells, but she just killed them and killed the other queens. Sadly, today I found her dead in her beehive.
Oh, James.
Yeah, she died. So that's Phoenix. So I'm going to get... So at the moment, she's in alcohol solution, and she's going to be put into resin as well. I'm quite sad she died. She was a lovely queen, jet black, with a bright yellow shape of a phoenix on her back, because where the bees nibbled the mark for yellow circle, and they nibbled it into a phoenix shape. So that's why we called her Phoenix.
So it's a very common term. Again, if we're talking to brand new beekeepers here, it's a very common term to just pinch an old queen and replace her with a new one, as if it's no big deal. And I love to hear someone that absolutely loves their queens like you do. It's almost like you formed a retirement community for her.
Yeah, that's why she was there. She was doing so well. Again, the reason I think she died again was Varroa. Again, I underestimated them this year. We got quite a few colonies left, which is good, which is fine, but I just didn't want her to go this year. I wanted to literally have another year in her to see how she goes.
How many colonies did you go into winter with this year?
I went into winter with 11, and we got six left. I lost one early on in September to wasps. They found a weakness in the colony, and they piled in there. In the autumn, and it was a strong colony as well, but obviously not strong enough for the wasps. So yellow jackets got in there and wiped them out.
Yellow jackets are horrible. We have them where I am too. And I used to hear they can only kill a weak colony. And I have found that to not be true. I've seen strong colonies get wiped out by them.
Definitely. Yeah.
And I have learned what time of year that they attack bee colonies. Where I am, it's right around September 1st every year. And so I've learned to put some kind of an entrance reducer. It's still hot here, so I just use like a screen, leave a small opening. Because a healthy colony, they can protect a small opening, just not a big, wide open opening. If there are that many voracious, ready to go into winter yellow jackets... Oh, and it's an ugly thing just to see it happen, because you'll see the guard bees come out, try to defend the hive, And those yellow jackets, just take them out. It's not a fair fight.
Well, I used to have my bees. I used to have them in my garden. So I had 7 colonies in the garden tucked around the back, and I could watch them out the window. So I could see if I saw a wasp hawking around there, I'd go out there, get a net, catch it, dispose of it. Normally the bees would, I'd give it to the bee or injure it, but give it to the bees, and they'd just all pile on it and start fighting it. But then I had to move my colonies because I can't see them all the time. I'm not that onto it as I used to be. I'm not that on it at protecting them from stuff. But like I said, I've got a job now where I'm working with my bees in the same area. So if I get a sneaky 5 minutes, I'll have a quick pop over there and have a look, see what's going on.
So tell us a little bit about that. What kind of place do you work at that would allow that?
So I work at a retirement village. So when people retire, these are like very, very well-off rich people. So when they retire, they downsize into a small community. And I'm like the gardener. I will go around and do odd jobs around everywhere. Plus my bees are in the corner. So in the summer comes in, a lot of them want to go get a bee suit on, and I'll take them into the hives to have a look.
That is awesome. Did you have a hard time getting permission to have bees there? Were they worried about the liability?
They seemed to, where I had my bees before, they were at my old work. I lived there on a school playing field. It was a massive big sports field. And when I moved out, my bees were asked to go, and my bosses were getting a bit funny. They said, well, we want these bees to go, they're a danger. But they've been there a year or so. They hadn't stung anyone. So they got a bit funny. So I went on BBC Radio and put out a plea for anyone who can offer me some land sort of ASAP this coming Saturday. I will move my bees there. And this lady reached out to me in the retirement village and said, you can put your bees here. And ended up me getting a job there as well. So, and I moved them in there literally 2 or 3 days after the radio went out.
So the people in the retirement community, what do they think about it? I mean, they put on a bee suit. What kind of experience do they have?
Well, they haven't had a bee suit on yet, but they love the thought of bees being there, being around the bees, having honey produced where they are, basically. So if they do get like hay fevers or any allergens to pollen or anything, then they got some honey right there they can use. But our lessons are going to start this summer. That's how it goes. But I do teach children. I've taught children for 2 years now, and that's good fun.
Tell us about that. Is that through the local school or your city?
Yeah, so we home educate our children. I've got 2 sons. We home educate them. So it's that community. And then we used to get 7 or 8 families coming in, all kids of all varying ages, none under 6, because I found the 6-year-olds were a bit, they didn't really listen. I was like, I remember one girl, she got some honey on her finger and she wanted to lick it. So she started to take her veil off as the bees were all out flying around to lick the honey. So I said to my wife, no under 6s. And since then it's been fine. I've had people who were absolutely petrified of bees, some children who are petrified. But I find the key to getting them sort of to break that scaredness, get them to hold a drone bee, because there's no male drone bees don't sting. They're quite cute looking. They've got big compound eyes. So I would always catch a drone bee on the frame and put it in their hand. And the confidence this gives them, then when other bees start landing on them for a rest, they're fine. They'll hold a frame as well full of bees. And yeah, so the drone bee is key for children, I find, for building confidence.
Cool. Well, I love talking to people that love honeybees. That's what this show is all about. You obviously do. You definitely qualify. I'm going to give you a chance to tell us a wild and crazy beekeeping story. And you haven't been a beekeeper all that long, but have you had anything unusual happen to you?
So before I got my own hives, I was helping an old chap a little way away from me up on a hill. It's called Portsdown Hill, near where I live. And he had beehives everywhere, but he was getting on. So he said, can you have some help? So I didn't really know what to wear. So I had just my bee suit on, but I didn't have welly boots. So my ankles were showing. And I wore cotton gloves for some reason. So we opened this hive and it was really aggressive. They were so aggressive. They literally piled all over my hands, stinging my hands. I got about 30 stings on my hands, on my ankles. And I'd never been stung by a bee before. So I came out in a rash and everything. But I had trigger finger, which is where when I woke up in the morning, my middle finger was always stuck down. I had to prise it up because something happened at night. Every single night I'd get this trigger finger. But for some reason, the bees concentrated all their stings on my middle finger. And ever since I've had them stings, I've never had trigger finger again. So I find that quite crazy.
That is so cool.
It hurt and it swelled up like a big balloon. Like I had a massive big finger. But since then, I've never had a problem with my finger.
I think that is awesome. And apitherapy is something we've only touched on a little bit on this podcast. I do want to get into it more. It's something that I personally have experimented with it myself.
Well, cool.
And we're not giving medical advice here, but wow. So if that trigger finger were to come back, what would you do? Purposely sting?
I was thinking this the other day because I was going to test it, just get a bee on my finger and try and get it to sting me, and I couldn't do it. I couldn't get it because I know it does really hurt when it first stings you. But if they attack me again, then it'll be all right because I wouldn't notice it as much because I'm concentrating on other things. But if I'm trying to get it to sting me, I couldn't do it. I was trying to test it, but I couldn't do it.
I've done it. The first time is really hard.
Yeah.
If you've been stung a bunch, you'd think, oh, it wouldn't be a big deal. But when you get a tweezer or something and you hold a bee and you're like, okay, I'm gonna get stung right here on purpose. It's like everything in your DNA is saying, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. And you have to overcome that. It does get easier after you do it the first time. But yeah, our human nature is just to avoid it at all costs. But how crazy that they actually went for a place where you needed help.
Yeah, because I've read somewhere that some bees know that a beekeeper is going to look after them and protect them to the best they can from, like, say, mites and wasps and hornets and hive beetles and stuff, all stuff like that. Somehow I think they do know that. So they want to help us. And in a way, they don't help us in the way we can help them. So I guess by stinging me, they sorted out my hand in the only way they knew how. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I guess we just don't give them near enough credit for how smart they are.
Yeah, and I've read somewhere they recognize faces as well, don't they, and smells.
I've read that as well.
Yeah.
Faces and smells. And so don't get on the bad side of your bees. They may recognize you next time around.
That's one thing your beekeeper said to me when I first started. He said I was too clanky. I was too, like, lifting up the crown board or moving a box. I was too fast. Just do it nice and at a slow, gentle pace, just so it doesn't make the bees too mad. Because only fast movements, they're going to start coming up, aren't they? The guards will come up and have a poke at you.
Well, that is exactly right. And there's more advice for new beekeepers today. I did the same thing. When I was new, I had great big gloves. And they made it so it was hard to pull out a frame without squishing a bee. It was hard to not drop one and kind of hard way back in. And those kinds of things they do not like. And I either use no gloves or nitrile gloves now because then I can be precise. I can keep from squishing any bees accidentally. I'm not dropping frames. I can just go. And also just the fact that you get used to them means you can go slower and not be as much in a hurry and not get your anxiety up. Because they love calmness, don't they?
That's right. When I was teaching a guy last year, and we opened a nuke box to transfer it into a big national hive. We use nationals here. That's the most commonest one here. I think you guys are Langstroth, is that right?
Yeah, Langstroth is the most common here.
Yeah. And he was so nervous. I said, all you've got to do is just concentrate on the task. So getting these bees from the nuke into there. Don't worry about the bees buzzing around us and all this. And he said it was fine. After that, he's focused. And he just got the frames out, put them in, took one out, put another one in. And he was fine. And he says, that's what you've got to do. Just don't worry about them all buzzing around. Because you're sealed up tight, so they're not going to get in. And yeah, he did really well, actually. He was really good. Nice and slow and just focused on the task at hand.
All right. Any other advice for new beekeepers before I let you go?
New beekeepers. Well, let's have a think. Got some good advice. So when you come into beekeeping, you're going to get a lot of advice thrown at you. Some one beekeeper wants you to do a certain thing this way, another one wants you to do the same thing, but a different way. And then if you do it one way, the other one gets mad and so much information comes away. My best advice is listen to every bit of advice you get and just adapt it to how you work.
Yeah, I found when I first came into Beacon, I was getting so much advice, and a lot of people were getting mad at me for doing advice differently to what they told me, if that makes sense. So they wanted me to do it their way. But I was learning so many different things. I was doing it a way what I could work well with, if that makes sense.
We have a saying here, ask 10 different beekeepers and you'll get 11 different answers.
Yeah, that's totally right, yeah.
And it's so true. So I think you just have to somehow get in harmony with your bees, be intuitive. If you're really there and you really care like that, I think it's going to come to you to know how to take care of them.
That's right, yeah.
I realized commercial beekeepers, they've got hundreds or thousands of hives, and it's a matter of just bang, 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 get in and get the work done. But for hobbyists and sideliners that have the time to take and to really get in tune with those bees, I don't know how to explain how to do it, but yeah, it works.
The one thing I don't like doing either is when you had to move, say you got your brew box and on top you got your super of honey, when you had to put them back, I would try my hardest not to squash a bee because I hate the because it can be completely clear and then you put the box down and you hear, it's like, oh, I've got one. And I feel really bad for that bee.
So how do you avoid that?
So what I try and do is I give a really big puff of smoke so the honey super is quite close to me. The big puff, and then get it on slowly but quickly, if that makes sense. So it's slow movements but at a fast pace. And then when I put it down, you might get one, but I really try my hardest not to squash any because I don't like it.
I've found, in addition to that, also just sliding that box on slightly. In other words, put it down instead of straight down exactly where it's going to fit.
Yeah.
Have it off just a little and then kind of slide it into place a little bit.
Yeah.
Can also help.
Yeah, good advice.
All right. Well, it's great to talk to you, Sir James. And we'll put in the show notes, Beekeeping for Hope, if anybody wants to get involved. Or just read about how they can do something similar in their community, because it's a great idea. And the educational side, we didn't talk about much, but I know there's that too, and they can learn about that as well. So thank you for being with me.
No problem. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for joining us here on Be Love Beekeeping, presented by Man Lake. Please, right now, before you forget, hit that follow or subscribe button, rate and comment on the show, then be sure to share it with a friend. We're building a community here, and we want to hear from you. Send your crazy stories, guest recommendations, new gadgets, or anything else that you'd like to hear about on the show to eric@belovebeekeeping.com. And remember, if you're not just in it for the honey or the money, you're in it for the love. See you next week.